Monster Movie Media presents. And welcome to Creepy Kingdom, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we have some creepy Christmas Disney fun for you. We will be taking a look at the creepiest parts of the 1961 Disney film, Babes in Toyland. So without any further ado, let's begin. Alrighty, I'm here with the evil queen of Creepy Kingdom, Miss Roxy Tart.
Hello, loyal subjects.
Hello. Every time you say that, I feel like I need to say hello on everyone's behalf.
I'm hoping that they're saying it back to me. I want everyone who's listening to be like, hi, Roxy.
Hi, Roxy.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Your Majesty. Kidding. Kind of.
It's like our listeners are going to be like, yo, man.
I'm kidding.
I just came here to hear some creepy Disney stuff. I'm not your loyal subject. It's all good. We all have to deal with Roxy's ego one, you know, a little bit at a time. It's not, so we're all good. But we're here today not to talk about Roxy's ego, but to talk about the 1961 Walt Disney film, Babes in Toyland.
During Backstage Party, Walt Disney shared with you a few selected scenes from his first big musical motion picture, Babes in Toyland. Every sparkling moment, an exciting new entertainment treat. Starring Ray Bolger, Tommy Sands, and Annette, and Ed Wynn. Don't miss Babes in Toyland, coming at Christmas time to a theater near you.
So, yeah, we decided to talk about this film because there's some creepy things in there. And it is the holiday season. So we thought we would be topical. Right? Was this your idea or mine, Roxy?
I think this was your idea.
Okay. Well, I'll take credit.
I'm almost positive this was your idea. Right. I think it was actually your idea like last year and you mentioned it. I was going to do this last year, and I was like, we should do that.
Okay, there we go. So it was collectively our ideas to do it right now.
Yeah, so, right. There we go.
Whoever's, yeah, go us. Whoever's idea it was, we did it, and we're doing it, and it's about to happen right now. So we're going to give you a little synopsis of the film. This, of course, will be spoilerific. If you haven't seen it, you could check it out. It is available for streaming on Netflix if you have a Netflix streaming account. We get no payment for that yet. Yet.
No, but we'd like to. Netflix, if you want to sponsor us, we're okay with that.
That would be fine. I think that would be perfect because they can get set everyone up for the films that we're going to talk about. And
yeah.
Everyone will be into it.
I think it's a good idea. They should do that.
All right. Let's get it going. But okay. Before that check comes, we're going to still get through this. And this film was based upon a 1903 operetta, Babes in Toyland. There had been a 1934 film, also titled Babes in Toyland, starring Laurel and Hardy, and three television adaptations prior to the Disney film, but Disney's was only the second film version of the operetta released in theaters and the first in Technicolor. However, the plot, in some cases, the music, bear little resemblance to the original, as Disney had most of the lyrics rewritten and some of the songs and the tempos drastically changed.
Because he's Disney, and he can do that.
Right. kid.
Who's gonna tell him no?
I don't know if that's representing Walt Disney or Disney as a company, or does it say he?
A little of both.
Yeah, a little
like, both. I mean, it's definitely a little of both. But Walt produced it, so
right.
You know, he was the one that came up with the changes.
Obviously.
Obviously.
So this film stars America's sweetheart, Annette Funicello.
Oh.
I would say she's a star.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she wasn't top billed on the list, but as far as when you see the list of people that were in it, she's the only one that I really know.
So. Right, her and Edwin.
Yes.
Like, I would say that they were the top two people in this movie.
So that's a pleasant thing. It's always nice to see Annette.
I will watch anything with Annette in it. I love her.
Well, I mean, you act like that's a challenge. Like, has she been in some horrible movies or something?
No, I mean, people don't expect it from me because I, you know, I'm kind of wild and kind of crazy and kind of the bad girl. And Annette is very much, like you said, America's sweetheart. She's very much the good girl. And she I think she's like my favorite good girl ever. So yeah. I love her.
She's lovely.
She is.
We're just taking a moment to take in Annette. So anyways, let's get into this film, huh?
Yeah, let's. So the film starts at, like, it was a stage play presented by Mother Goose and her goose companion, Sylvester, who is, like, in my opinion, the voice of reason in this movie. but it's about two nursery rhyme characters, Mary from Mary, Mary, Quite Contrary, and Tom the Piper's Son, and they're about to be married, and the whole town is very excited. But who's not excited is Barnaby, who is the villain. And I think he's supposed to be the crooked man in the crooked house.
Okay.
Because he's got the cane and his house is all crooked and whatnot. They never actually say it, but that was always my, like, interpretation of it. So he doesn't want them to get married. So he's going to hire these two guys, Rodrigo and Gonzorio, I think.
Gonzorgo. I think.
Gonzorgo.
Yeah, I think it's Gonzorgo.
Rigo and Gonzorgo. What a weird name. And he wants them, he's got a three-part plan. They're going to kidnap Tom, they're going to throw Tom into the river, and they're going to kidnap Mary's sheep.
The reason that he wants to do this is somehow he knows that Mary, Quite Contrary, is going to get an inheritance from somewhere. That's
which is really
explained.
Weird, because Mary doesn't know that she's going to get the inheritance. Yeah. Like, he knows it, but she doesn't. Who died?
Right.
Or is it like a dowry? Like, because she gets it when she gets married. So maybe, I mean, seriously, maybe it's her dowry. Like, if you think about when it was originally written.
Maybe, yeah.
I think they used inheritance in the Disney version, but I think it's actually her dowry that she gets when she gets married. So, yes, Barnaby wants the dowry and doesn't think that Tom should get it. So he's going to get Tom out of the way and then steal the sheep so that she can't make any money so that she has to marry him. Or go broke and give up her house. And all her little siblings will starve to death.
Very nice. So the film kind of, well, it starts off with this, like, kind of musical number of all the different nursery rhymes and fairy tales. Not fairy tales, more nursery rhymes, I would say.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, that the goose, Sylvester, is, you know, starts off with the film opens with a shot of a goose puppet, very horribly lip syncing words. And right off the bat, it's very eerie and creepy. I thought, like, just like,
did you think Sylvester was creepy?
Oh, 100%. It was very unsettling. Especially as the film starts, you're just like, what is going on here?
It is interesting because you expect to see Annette and you don't.
No,
this weird goose.
Like, goose puppet. I mean, I would say, like, in the way that it's definitely a puppet that Mother Goose is operating, the actress. It almost looks like bad ventriloquism, but obviously she wasn't doing ventriloquism because it was just overdubbed later. but it just opening on a close up of a goose puppet's face. And I don't really care for the sound of that guy's voice. The voice was the director, so it wasn't just a random person. But I don't know. I don't really care for the goose.
I actually really like the goose. So there we go. But, I agree with him being the puppet itself is definitely a little unsettling, but I really appreciate the goose in the movie, actually, because when things are going on that as an audience person, you're like, why are you believing this guy when he says it? The goose is like the audience voice.
That's true.
You know, he's like, hey, Mother Goose, maybe we shouldn't believe the bad guy. Oh, be quiet. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess what he's saying is fine. I guess I literally don't like the sound of his voice.
You just have a thing against that puppet.
It just kind of bugs me. I guess he was stating the obvious as an audience member. So, and also he's stating what the audience thinks, but no one's really listening to him, so it's not really serving a purpose.
No, that irks me.
You know, like, so it's kind of, I guess that's annoying too. You know, like, it's not like someone's like, oh yeah, you're right. Maybe we could consider this. It's just kind of like, you know what he sounds like? He just sounds like someone that's like annoying in the movie theater that's just talking to the screen.
Oh, it's true though. It's totally true. Don't listen to him. He's lying to you.
It's like, shut up. I'm trying to watch the movie, Goose. If they don't listen to him, then nothing's going to happen.
It's true. That is a very good point. The whole movie would just end, you know? And that would be like, I think this goose is right. The end.
Except she wouldn't have had as much as energy as you just read that line. So
probably not.
But we'll get to that. Another thing that happens during this musical number is that Jack B. Nimble makes an appearance. And, you know, he starts jumping over candlesticks, as he's known to do.
Okay, were you worried about Jack in this scene? Because I was, like, in fear of his life. Seriously, the way that he jumped over it, he's positioned so weird. Like, and I get that it was the harness and stuff like that. But, like, I was just like, this boy is going to land on his head and break his neck.
Well... he did end up catching on fire.
He did. Yeah, and that in itself is a little messed up.
I thought that was creepy.
Poor Jack. And like, really, they set him on fire. They set his tail on fire. And then Jack and Jill come up with a bucket of water. And I'm sure that it was supposed to go out, but it doesn't go out. And he has to run off stage with his tailcoat on fire. Like, I'd have freaked out.
Yeah, I'd imagine the stunts weren't as safe as they are today. So.
Yeah, we're going to set you on fire. And these two little kids with a pail of water are going to be what put you out. Don't even worry about it. It'll be cool. It'll look good. Cool. It'll look good.
You're going to be in a Disney movie. Shut up.
Don't even trip.
And that boy went on to be... James Bond. No, I just made that up. I don't know. John Perry's his name. I'll give him a shout out.
Go John. Right on.
Let Disney set him on fire.
I might let Disney set me on fire if they told me I could be in a Disney movie. I'll be honest.
Well, that's out there now. Yeah, and then we have the first appearance of Barnaby's house, which, you know, it kind of pans up to the right... away from all the happy, fun times. And it's a creepy little house on the corner. Or not on the whole corner. It's a creepy little house on the hill. And that was kind of cool. I liked, oh, there's some creepy stuff going on around there. Very similar to the trailer of Maleficent, because I don't remember this at all in the movie. You know, I think about it. How they pan over to the, you know, it starts on the nice, you know, Disney... fairy tale castle, which is and it pans over to an evil looking castle. That was just in the trailer. I don't remember that from the movie at all. Do you?
I don't.
Yeah, so I think that was
might have been, but I don't know. I've only seen it once though, not like some people.
I've only seen it twice. You're actually...
No, I gotta say though, Barnaby, like, I mean, I'm sure it's great to live in town and have all of those neighbors, but that's a really small town and they were all really squished together. He's got a lot of land. Like, he's got a great view.
Oh, yeah.
I'm down with his house.
Yeah, like, no, he's got a great setup. Inside.
Except for those shutters. He's got a little issue with his shutters.
You have to keep it dark, you know. But also, unexplained, in his house, there was just like a full skeleton just chilling.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, he's like, I love that he is just the like quintessential villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the really tall top hat. He's got the, you know, the bat scalloped cape, black satin cape. Like, he's just, he's so typical villain for, you know, early, our early century and mid century and whatnot. I think it was awesome. I love that over the topness.
Yeah, he definitely was the villain. His little villainy mustache.
Yeah, and he had the villain mustache. And of, I mean, why wouldn't he have a skeleton?
Yeah, I mean, but it's just funny because the rest of his place wasn't really that creepy looking on the inside. It was just like a full skeleton just sitting there. Like it almost looks like the, like they started to make it look creepy and they're like, just throw a skeleton there, it's fine.
It came with the cape.
Yeah. Probably.
If you buy your villain outfit, your hat and cape and mustache, like, oh, and your cane that turns into a sword, like if you buy that villain package, you get the skeleton with it. It's like a bonus.
Okay, that's what it was. All right.
Yeah. I'm positive.
All right, so...
So, yeah, so he hires these dudes, and they're going to go and carry out this three-step plan so that he can marry Mary. And they go down, and they do end up getting Tom by hitting him in the head with a hammer, which that hammer is creepy, if you ask me. Like, he hits Rodrigo with the hammer, and it messes up Rodrigo's legs so that, like, it shoves one of his legs up into his body so he walks crooked. And then he has to have him hit the other leg so that he's even. So now what, you're like a foot shorter? And then they hit Tom with it and it takes him straight into the ground. Like, that's a messed up hammer. That's some kind of Magic Thor's hammer thing going on.
Yeah, no, I didn't make a note of that, but yeah. No, definitely for sure.
That's a powerful hammer right there. That is a powerful weapon. Just, you know. But yeah, so they grab Tom, and they go and decide that they're going to head towards the sea to throw him in. But on the way, they see a sign that says to Gypsy Camp, and they decide that they will instead sell him to the gypsies so they can get paid for him twice, once from the gypsies and once from Barnaby.
Right. And this was the beginning of some things that may or may not have been creepy, but... started to be a little disturbing.
Indentured servitude. We're going to sell him to the gypsies.
Yeah, well, first they say the line, well, gypsies buy babies, so surely they'll pay for a full-grown man. I feel like that line would not have made the cut in the 2014.
Probably not.
I found that to be a little offensive.
But wasn't that true about gypsies at that time? Like,
what time are we referring to here?
Well, the whole thing takes place in a very loosely, you know, turn of the century,
right,
time period. That nursery rhyme time period is definitely, you know, loosely Victorian, Edwardian, whatnot. But I love those old gypsy rumors. I always thought that they were hilarious, where, you know, if you're not good, we'll sell you to the gypsies, and they're all thieves and scoundrels, and like, I love those old gypsy stories. I think they're awesome.
Yeah, I kind of find them offensive, I guess. I don't know.
I used to threaten to sell my brother to the gypsies, so quite often, actually. Maybe I got the idea from this movie. Yeah, but when he was little, I used to tell him if he was not good, I was going to sell him to the gypsies.
Well. And look how he turned out.
So now we know why I'm the evil queen of Creepy Kingdom. Because if you don't do what I say, James, off to the gypsies with you.
All right. Well, I like them. I want to hang out with Esmeralda from Hunchback of Notre Dame. I think she's a great woman. So I'll gladly go for free.
Wait, no, then I'm not getting any money out of it.
But anyways, I this isn't the last of my being offended, so we'll just keep moving on.
Is there more of James being offended?
That, I just thought that line. That line definitely was off-putting. I was like, "Wow, that's something." All right. So the henchmen return and tell Mary Barnaby and the citizens of Mother Gooseland that Tom has accidentally drowned. Very sad.
Yeah, it's horrible. We should also point out that they were pretending to be sailors at this point.
Right.
That's important. It's an important plot point.
Yes.
Otherwise, how would they know?
Right. Yeah, they saw them. They're out at sea. They show Mary a phony letter in which Tom tells her that he is abandoning her for her own good and that she'd be better off marrying Barnaby. Mary, believing she is to be destined to be alone, reluctantly accepts the proposal from Barnaby. Barnaby unwillingly arranges for the same gypsies that Tom that have Tom to provide entertainment for the marriage. Before we go on, actually, there's a musical number while she's deciding, you know, whether she should marry Barnaby or not. She sings a song, I Can't Do the Sum. I don't know if that's the official title of the song.
I believe it is.
Yeah. And this, for some reason, decided to be a hallucinogenic acid trip of a sequence about a song that she doesn't know how to do math. I don't really get the connection there. But
I don't know, but I loved it. I love this song.
Put down beans and cross out cake. Let me see. Oh, dear me. What a job to undertake. Milk plus bread. Oh, my head. Add, subtract.
Like, I'm horrible at math. I have always been horrible at math my whole life. And I used to sit in class and hum this during math.
Really?
Yes, I'm not even joking. I haven't seen the movie in a really long time. I've never owned this movie. You know, we never had it on video or anything. But I did own the record. So I know the music a lot better than I know the movie. But yes, I used to sit in math class when I was having a hard time. And I probably all the way through school, from elementary school all the way to high school. And I would sing this song when I couldn't, when I just couldn't do it anymore. That it was like my escape from a math test.
Well, I probably would have sang it too, because I'm not. But I found this song in general in the storyline of the film to be pretty pathetic, because it was just like, I don't know, take out a calculator, dude. You don't have to marry this guy. Like,
there were no calculators then. They didn't have time. She could have pulled out her abacus, I guess.
Yeah, yes.
She gave up real easy.
She gave up real easy, man. That's all.
Well, I hate to say this, you know, I'm not trying to diss Mary or anything, but she's not the brightest bulb in the box.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was kind of insinuating.
No idea what's going on around her. She pulls out a chalkboard and a couple of bills and is like, maybe if we walk on our hands, we won't need shoe repairs as much. What?
Yeah, Mary's a little slow. I don't know what else.
It's a good thing she's pretty. Hey, that's my life, okay? I can't do the sum, but at least I'm pretty.
All right. I have that going for me as well, so that's fine.
I love that scene, though. Actually, before we go on, speaking of musical numbers that are right in there, when the henchmen come and sing and tell Mary that Tom has died, they sing that song, Slowly He Sank into the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite, I'm not going to say it's creepy, but it's a little off, is that as they're singing it, the ground underneath them is like disappearing and filling up with water.
Yeah, that is a little weird.
Do you remember that part?
I don't, actually.
Yeah, so as they're singing the song, like the Rodrigo is dancing around the fat guy, and like they'll show him from like the bust up, and then they'll back during the chorus, they back up, and the floor underneath them is actually dropping out and filling up with water. So these two guys, as they're singing about Tom sinking into the sea, are sinking into Mary's garden.
I did notice the water, and I was wondering where that came from. So I guess that's what was going on.
Yeah, I think Mary's got a creepy garden. When they hit Tom on the head, he went right through the grass. He sank right into it. Like, these two are sinking into the water. I think Mary's garden is trying to, like, eat people. It's like quicksand.
That Mary. Not So quite contrary.
She may not be smart, but she's sneaky.
Yeah, she figures out what she's got to do. So, moving on. Barnaby unwillingly arranges for the same gypsies that have Tom to provide entertainment for the marriage. Tom, disguised in drag as the gypsy Floretta, reveals himself, and Barnaby pursues the frightened henchmen, furious at their deception. One of the children informs Mary that they saw sheep tracks leading into the forest of no return.
Yes, but before we get to the forest, we have to talk about the gypsies.
Yeah, so then they did this this grand Disney musical number, which I will point out, a lot of films of this time period, I mean, just to ruin the illusion of films prior to, I don't know, 1970, most films, the sound was recorded after the fact, like all the dialogue, so there'd be like lip syncing, you know, people would have to re-perform the performance because the camera equipment was too loud. And in really good films, or high quality films like Gone with the Wind or, you know, Citizen Kane, that was like right on. Like you wouldn't even notice. But unlike a lot of crappy films, it looks like sometimes they have rubbery lips because it's just not, they're not given the same exact performance. Have you ever noticed this?
Oh yeah, I love old movies. So you know, if anybody that loves old movies notices that, you know.
Well, the thing that
you have to, it looks so cheesy.
Yeah, it sticks out. But sometimes with these musical numbers in the older Disney films, when it's a bunch of people singing, first of all, it's totally the same like group of people singing like forever. Like in all these films, because they sound exactly the same, this chorus.
Hey, you go with what you know. All right.
Like, I don't know. I recently watched Song of the South, and there was a very similar scene with a bunch of black people singing that sounded exactly like the gypsies. but what they do is they, like, it's always this wide shot, so you can't really see their mouths moving as they're singing. It's this group of, like, 20 people from, like, far away.
And their big dance number. And admittedly, like, it's a good dance number. The gypsy scene, it is a good dance number. You know, they have tumblers and they have this and that, but it drags. It does not need to go on for as long as it goes on for. And that's kind of typical in this era of movies.
Yeah, they felt like that was what people were going to see. Like they really wanted to, you know, let those drag out.
So Tom, as Floretta, the gypsy, the old gypsy woman. Okay, so you remember how I said I had the record, so I know the music a lot better?
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten about this song until I started watching it again the other day. Mm-hmm. And he comes out, and he's singing, and I realized that, like, subconsciously, my favorite line from the song was coming up, and I sang it at the top of my lungs. My mom was here. My grandma was here. Like, they just... But it's the salami line, and her breath doesn't smell like salami. I don't know why I loved that line so much when I was little, but I don't know, something salami. I used to love that whole part of the song when he's singing his opening thing. He started singing and it all rushed back and I got this huge smile on my face and I like actually stood up and did this like grand gesture to sing the salami line. And then I sat down again and everybody that was over was like, what the heck is she doing?
What the heck? That's what they said.
That's exactly what they said. But yeah, I just had to throw out there that Tom as the gypsy woman apparently, like, in my childhood was a big thing because it all came, like, rushing back.
Oh, wow, so you had a moment.
I did. I all had a moment.
I was just going to say before what I was saying, it was more gypsy stuff. I mean, I don't know. This whole thing was just kind of like, I don't know. It was just so stereotypical that I was just like... and again, I made a declaration that when we watch these films, I'm going to give my opinion of it right now, like James in 2014, 2015. I'm not going to make excuses for whatever. I'm just going to say what I think of it right now. So, you know, I know, you know, there's a lot of things in older films that are like, oh boy, that's a little much. And there's definitely way worse things than this, but it was just still a little bit like, and it is also the fact that it dragged on and on and on. You're just like, okay, I get it.
Like, I get that you hired these tumblers and yes. You want to get your money's worth. Yeah. But come on.
We should have had a montage, you know, right? In real time.
Yet another thing that is missing from these old movies.
Montages.
They weren't real big on montages. Yeah, no.
I feel like it was like an 80s thing.
Yeah. Thank you, 80s.
Yeah, so one of the many great things the 80s gave us. and then they mentioned The Forest of No Return.
Yes.
Which right away, that to me is when the film kind of picked up its pace and it held my interest, because a lot of this up until this point was like, I was checking out a lot. I was spacing out a lot. Like, it wasn't really holding my interest.
There was a lot of build up to this part of the plot. Like, for a movie that's called Babes in Toyland, they sure didn't spend a lot of time in Toyland.
No.
Like, but they, you know, you see 2 days in Toyland. But yeah, so Tom reveals that he's himself and he's not dead. And yay! And, you know, Mary gets all happy, and then Tom and Mary hug and hold hands and run back to Mary's house. And there's this note on the door from the kids, from her siblings, that are like, hey, we heard the sheep went into the woods. We're going into the Forest of No Return to find the sheep. Which, go kids for being, like, industrial. I'm proud of them for stepping up. But I'm not sure that, you know, five little kids should be alone in a forest at night.
Let alone the Forest of No Return. Like, it's not like the spooky forest or, you know, the dark forest. It's literally like, if you go in here, you're not coming back out of it.
I don't think that this plan was very well thought through. So, of course, Tom and Mary decide, like the good, responsible adults that they are, that they should run out to the Forest of No Return and find these kids and hope that they can return them. You know, children.
Yes.
So silly.
I liked the Forest of No Return sign. Just in case you weren't clear of where you were going, there was a sign. I want that in my home, actually. I really like the sign.
The people in Nursery Rhymeland are very conscious of warning you when you're leaving, apparently. You know, there's like 80 signs as you're going into the Forest of No Return. This is the Forest of No Return. Don't go this way. Go back. No trespass. Do not go here.
I want these signs leading up to my front door.
Right. And now I think that we can pretty much, everyone that watched this movie as a child can agree that the Forest of No Return scene is hands down the creepiest scene in the movie.
Yeah, if they wanted to creep people out, you know, mission accomplished.
Although, when I was a kid, I thought it was really creepy, and of course, as an adult, I think it's just kind of ridiculous. But those trees!
Yes. Well, let's talk about the trees first.
Yeah, we need to talk about the trees.
Where are we in your paragraph that you were summarizing?
I wasn't actually even reading.
Right on.
they didn't put that part in the paragraph. I'm like, people, we're skipping ahead. What the hell is your problem?
Let's see. So they're in the forest, and, you know, the trees start coming to life around them. So basically, it's like, if you haven't seen this, let's just envision, like, adults in tree costumes. Like the size of adults.
Creepy rubber tree costumes.
Yeah, with these weird creepy faces dancing around. It kind of reminds me of like H.R. Puffin stuff for kind of thing. Like if you have any frame of reference at all, I would say it was kind of like that kind of weird like 60s like acid trip. I keep going back to that because this thing is totally trippy. I do want to point something out here. I don't know where I read this. But I did in my research that Walt wanted this to be like as grand of a scale, I think that was the quote, as The Wizard of Oz. And so as you watch this, you feel like this is such a wannabe Wizard of Oz movie, but there's just it doesn't connect. It doesn't really actually become
it doesn't.
That. It doesn't become that it doesn't hit that quality of Wizard of Oz.
Well, and nothing did. Like, the Wizard of Oz came out and everybody wanted a piece of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's everyone wanted a piece of the Wizard of Oz and to do something like the Wizard of Oz. And
but this is so long after the Wizard of Oz.
Right?
1961. So I don't know. It's not quite the Wizard of Oz, but knowing that and while watching it, I could totally see like the idea of like, oh, we have these creepy trees. That's kind of like some creepy stuff that was in Wizard of Oz, but it just comes off as just unsettling. Like, which maybe that's what they're going for, but it literally is creepy. Like, it's just like, it's nightmare seeing these dancing trees.
What year did The Wizard of Oz come out? Oh, 39. That's right.
Yeah, I knew it was the 30s. So yeah, that's quite a ways after. and you know, and this was the first live musical that Disney ever produced. So, you know, you could tell that they were just like waiting to try to to catch up to Wizard of Oz.
Right. 30 years later. Yeah.
Didn't quite execute it as well, but
no, it was not as well executed. But the trees were still really creepy when I was little, and the way that they do it, like the children wander into this clearing and they're surrounded. It's a circle of trees, but they have all the people in the tree costumes with their backs to the camera, so they just look like tree sets. And then the next thing you know, all these trees turn around and they've got these creepy faces and these weird rubbery mouth things, and they start to sing their creepy "This is the Forest of No Return" song. Well, it is.
What's the matter?
I said it is. It's just creepy, the whole thing.
Mission accomplished. They that was definitely creepy. Anyways, eventually Mary and Tom find the kids and they want to bring them back, but the trees inform them that they're under arrest for being in the forest, and they have to go visit the toy maker. So this is a really bizarre thing here, because they're in a forest of no return looking for sheep. That's why they're there, by the way. and some scary trees come to life and say, "We are going to capture you." And then they say, "We're going to capture you and bring you to the toy maker." Like, where is a toy maker in this creepy forest? Like, why would you? It's such a weird connection.
Okay, I have theory.
Okay,
I have since I was little, actually, because this didn't make any sense to me. And I wasn't like little, but when I got a little bit older. Okay, first things first. Remember earlier how I mentioned that Tom and Mary were responsible adults, so we're going to go find these kids?
Yeah.
No, because when they find the kids are like, "Oh my god, the tree's attacked. And they threatened us." And Tom and Mary were like,
"They didn't believe them." Yeah.
Yeah, we might live in a nursery rhyme land where the goose talks, but we're not going to believe you that the trees came to life, even though this place is hell of creepy and called the Forest of No Return. And instead of going home, even though it only took us 5 minutes to come and find you, it's too dark. Let's lay down right here where you said that the trees came to life. And everyone just go to sleep until morning, and then they sing one of my favorite songs. But it's just one of those moments of, what are you people doing? Like, no, go home. And why? And how do they not believe them about the trees? The goose talks. Like, you're Mary Contrary, and Bo Peep is the one that lost her sheep, and you don't believe her that these trees have come to life. So that irks me. That always, like, really bothered me about the grown-ups. But, okay, so here's my theory.
Okay.
My theory is that because as soon as the trees tell them they're going to Toyland, the kids are like, "Oh, Toyland?"
Right.
And they get all excited. And then the trees, like, walk them to the edge of the forest, and there's, oh my god, this amazing Toyland. And they're like, "Okay, just go. It's cool. You know, go find the toy maker. We're just going to let you go."
Didn't escort them to their capture. Right.
So my theory is that the toy maker just doesn't want anyone in Toyland, so he sets up this fake scary, like, there's nothing really wrong with the forest.
Okay.
He just, like, spread this rumor throughout time that it was a horrible place to go, so that nobody would come in. Because if everybody knew where Toyland was, he'd have some serious problems.
Right.
Like,
yeah, yeah, he'd be swamped.
Right?
That's kind of like how the North Pole is nowhere near any place that anyone could go to.
Yeah. And, like, obviously Toyland is the North Pole because he's the one that's making all of the toys for Christmas for some reason.
Right, yeah. For some, and that's how this is a Christmas movie.
Right? That's it. Because the toy maker is this version of Santa Claus because he makes all the toys for Christmas. And it's mid-October. And he needs help because he won't meet his deadline.
Right.
Like, but no, that was always my theory, is that he's the one that started the rumors and he's the one that put up the signs in the forest so that the normal average person wouldn't find Toyland. Because otherwise, right, everybody'd just be bothering him for toys.
All right, I'll buy that.
He'd be like a Toys R Us.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'll buy that more than just the random... the random idea that, oh, there's a toy maker that's in charge of these creepy trees. Sure.
Yeah.
So now it's time for the quote-unquote babes to go to Toyland.
Yep.
Which we were discussing before we recorded. I assume the babes are the children. I guess, was that a term for children in the past?
Yes.
Babes? Okay.
That is a vintage term for children.
Yeah,
because
I was expecting, like, some real, like, attractive women to be hanging out in Toyland this whole film.
You were sadly mistaken. But there is that doll. She's got a good wink.
Yeah, there's a teaser there. But anyways, no, I wasn't expecting it. So so we meet the toy maker, and right away you hear his voice and you're like, oh my god, it sounds so familiar. And it is the voice, of course, the Mad Hatter.
Yep. It's Edwin.
So that's fun. It wasn't creepy, but I was like...
Not creepy. He also does show up later on, years later, in Mary Poppins.
Yes.
We love him. Everybody loves Edwin. How can you not love Edwin?
I don't know. Only jerks can't love him. as you mentioned, he was trying to get his old everything together, and he has an assistant that tries to make things to help him and make little, you know, machines. And there's this whole drawn out thing about one machine that fails miserably, and there's a big,
just drags.
Yeah, it's a big explosion and all this stuff.
And the machine gets a little creepy. That part where the machine, it's going out of control and its mouth is opening up and down really fast, and it's got fire coming out of it and whatnot. If I was a kid and I saw that in person, that would freak me out.
Yeah, it has little eyes and stuff, like a face was forming in the machine as though it was like angry and then fire everything. Yeah, it was a little creepy.
Right?
But eventually the assistant comes up with a shrinking ray gun. Was that what he called it?
I don't think he actually called it anything. It was just a shrink ray.
Okay.
Shrunk things. And they eventually figure out that while the shrink ray thing is really, really cool, it's not very practical because where are you going to get all the big stuff to shrink into toys?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense at all. So Edwin's character, the toy maker, he decided he doesn't need it, so he throws it out the window. This whole time, Barnaby and the henchmen have been following Tom and Mary because Barnaby still has his plan that we are going to kill Tom.
Right.
So the whole time they've been following them through the woods and all this stuff, which is actually a really cool scene. I love the henchmen and Barnaby in the woods, the way that they filmed it, like with them walking behind the trees. Mm-hmm. But he throws the shrink ray out the window and Barnaby catches it and just wreaks havoc from this point. He's going to shrink everyone. First, he shrinks the toy maker. Then he shrinks the henchmen because they're like, dude, you've gone too far. You're shrinking people now. And then, of course, he shrinks Tom. But I think this is the creepiest that Barnaby gets to be in the movie because he's acting to the, you know, the little shrunken down people. So his overacting is going even more. But just the way that it's filmed, because it's so close to his face.
Yeah.
And these facial expressions that he's making, and he looks like he's just like going to eat these little people hanging in front of him. And it's just like, dude, like that's Barnaby's creepiness for the movie. He's got some great faces when he's talking to the shrunk down people.
Oh, for sure. And there's one during when he first appears. It's like a shot in a mirror. Do you remember this? Like appears in the toy maker's place.
No,
there was like a shot like there's like a mirror, and he just appears in the back of it. I forget who's looking in the mirror, but like that's his reveal, like in a reflection. It's like super creepy. I think Tom was looking in the mirror. I don't know what it was, but it was maybe Mary. I don't know.
I got a text during the part when he shrunk down Tom. It actually might have been from you, so I missed that scene because I was typing. So my bad.
All right, my fault. You're like, it was from you.
You made me miss a pivotal part of the movie, James.
I don't know. I thought it was a pretty creepy shot. I don't know. I liked it. You just kind of just the idea that like. Something just you're looking in the mirror and then something appears behind you is always creepy,
right? And so then Barnaby's like, well, now Mary has to marry me, or I'm gonna smush Tom, you know, under my boot. And during the ceremony, Tom gets away and he goes, and you got to take it from here because you get to talk about this scene.
Yes, now we have a grand battle between Shrunken Tom. And he gathers up all the toys to lead his army against Barnaby, full-size Barnaby, which he starts to try to get the wedding continued at this point. That's what's going on, right? Did you say that?
No, he's trying to get the toy maker to stall the wedding.
That's what Tom's doing. But there's a wedding going. Like, he tries to...
Yeah, Barnaby is marrying Mary during all of this.
So yeah. The toy maker's stalling, but Tom is gearing up the troops and to get going. And we see the wooden soldiers, which have become synonymous with the Disney parades,
the Christmas parade.
Christmas parade. And yep. A funny note is while you and I were watching the Christmas parade in Disneyland recently, I was I totally was like, yo, I bet you don't even know where those soldiers are from.
He did. He challenged me. He looked right at me while we were watching the Christmas parade and was like, "Bet you don't know where those soldiers are from." And I'm like, "Babes in Toyland." Word I can't say on this show. Yeah.
We had never talked about this film before, so it's just funny.
Yes, the soldiers are in the Christmas parade. They're in it every single year, and they look exactly like the ones in the movie. Well, except that they're, life size, so obviously they got hit with the other gun that makes things bigger.
Yeah,
and they're also in Mary Poppins.
Yes, they make an appearance there. But the stop motion is kind of creepy of them walking. It was very groundbreaking for the time, I guess. I don't know. I mean, when did Gumby come out? Because Gumby looked a lot smoother than this sequence. I think Gumby was before this. It was. I thought the stop motion was creepy. But I don't know. This whole sequence just gets so ridiculous.
It is, and it's so long. It drags on. And like you're trying to get this dude to stall this wedding. Maybe you should just go for like the artillery and not waste your time with the drummers and the trumpet guys and like we got to get all of the musical soldiers out of their boxes and then we'll go get the fighters. Like what?
It was just magical. The toys are coming to life for some reason.
That's Tom is just not a good general. That's really what it boils down to here.
Yeah, that's true. But there's explosions coming out of cannons, and there were some casualties.
There's some toy casualties. It's very sad. Barnaby gets his hand on a cannon. Yeah. Just goes to town on these toys.
At some point, he gets shrunken with the shrink ray, too. And so then eventually Tom and Barnaby are battling. There's sword fighting.
Mm-hmm.
When does he get shrunk with the shrink ray? I don't remember exactly who did that.
Mary, he's got the shrink ray in his hands and he's about to shoot Tom with it again because if he shoots something twice, it disappears. And Mary picks up a cannon and shoots it at him and blows up the shrink ray. And so the chemical compound gets all.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
So go Mary!
Yeah.
One part Mary, of girl power in the whole movie.
I was like, Mary actually did something.
Right. We won't even get into how misogynistic the song "Just a Toy" is. Okay, that's from my podcast.
Okay,
we'll talk about that in Roxy's world.
Yeah. So I mean, she actually, they're like, who? They're like the whole time. I bet they were writing like, like, there's no more men left to do something. Well, I guess we'll have Mary.
We're out of guys. Can we have a girl be proactive? Is that okay? So, yeah, she picks up a cannon. She shoots Barnaby and shrinks him down. And then Tom and Barnaby have a sword fight. It's so exciting.
They have a sword fight. And the funny thing about that, on the sword fight, what they're fighting over, there's all these, like, body parts of soldiers that were exploded as a decapitated head. Essentially, they were alive a second ago, so we believe them to be living beings. And now they're just, like, their corpses are just spread out all over the ground they're fighting over. You know, since they were alive a second ago, I thought that was kind of creepy, you know, that they're just, you know, fighting over the corpses there.
Yep. It's their fallen comrades.
Yeah, they fought to the death.
Sad. Good for them. Yeah, so they're in an epic sword fight. And Tom, of course, because he's the hero, ends up beating Barnaby. And there's some go back and forth as to whether or not he died. Some people say that, you know, Tom stabs him and he falls into the toy box and he's dead. And other people say that, you know, he's not dead and it's a Disney movie, so who knows. They can kill parents. They can probably kill the bad guy.
Well, when he stabbed him, he didn't impale him. It kind of just poked him.
Well, it is a toy sword.
Yeah. But it was making metal noises when they were hitting each other. So, I don't know.
Yeah. But after the fight, the assistant comes in again, who apparently, even though he was up this whole time making a new invention in his room, he never heard this giant battle going on and all of these toys coming to life, because he runs back in and he's got this new invention that will regrow everything that's been shrunk. So he hits everybody with it.
Great time.
Yeah. Yeah, he hits everybody with it. And then the kids come out as soon as everybody's okay. The kids come out and look around. And they're like, oh my gosh, you were playing with the toys. And they're like, yeah, that's totally what we were doing.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they didn't want the kids to know that they fought, which was really weird.
Right? Seriously, though, the assistant guy, I think he has a hearing problem, because he was up in the next room inventing this thing, and he never once poked his head out to see what all this explosion like, and. Mm-hmm.
No, he was focused, stuff. Man. He was in the zone. He was in the zone.
He was focused. Yeah. So then, supposedly, because of the time jump, Tom and Mary and the kids actually stay with the toy maker and help him out until Christmas time, because, mind you, it is mid-October right. when they get there. Mm-hmm. And then the next scene, it's December and there's snow on the ground, and Tom and Mary are getting married, and everyone lived happily ever after.
Maybe. We'll see. Let's see how the sequel goes. But, yeah, that was Babes in Toyland, man.
That was Babes in Toyland. Not as creepy as I remember it from when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch this as a kid. This is the first time I watched this was a few years ago. So, yeah, I didn't. This didn't make it into my into my rotation of Disney films.
I'm positive they must have shown it like at Christmas time on television, because I know I've seen it a few times when I was a kid. But like I said, I had the record, so I remember the music a lot better than the movie.
Right. That's probably your. Yeah. That's. I think of people of our age, which is a question mark, I think that's kind of how we really got to know a lot of this stuff, is from the records or the book on tape. Or
yep. I had my Fisher-Price record player played that Babes in Toyland record all the time.
Right on. Yeah, so it's very, you know, we kind of, you know, it's weird because we have an attachment to a lot of this stuff, but it's not from watching the films over and over again. Mm-hmm. We didn't have all that stuff when we were really young. So, I think it's time for some creepy trivia. So, I mentioned the stop motion of Wooden Soldier thing, which I don't know. Would you say is like a minute, maybe, of them
no,
marching?
No, that drags. Come on. No,
I mean, the stop motion. I mean, no, let's be clear. There was stop. They were in it lot, and they were moving.
Stop motion and animated, right? It was two different. Okay.
Yeah, because. Because there's times when the toy soldiers are moving, but that wasn't stop motion. You know, like that was like they weren't moving their arms and legs and stuff. They were just moving like that.
Totally. Specifically the part where they're marching, right?
Yeah.
Was that the mm-hmm. that was the big stop motion part?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, it was like a minute.
Yeah. So that took 6 months to film. So that's pretty crazy.
That's dedication. That that's some serious dedication right there. Yeah. I'm impressed by the people nowadays who make those stop motion like Lego videos on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like that impresses me. I can't even imagine trying to do it in 1961.
Well, like I was saying before, I feel like whoever was in charge of doing stop motion on this film was not the most skilled in it. Because I feel like Gumby was definitely like from like the 50s, and that was pretty
1955,
smooth.
By the way.
There we go. Yeah. So there goes.
I got you.
They should have. Thank you. Appreciate it. They should have hired the Gumby people to do this scene. You know, like, I mean, that's what they do now. Like, you know, these big blockbuster films, they hire people that specialize in certain special effects or, you know, visual effects to do it instead of them trying to figure it out. But that's totally that's the way Disney did it back then. We got to figure it out.
This is just the kids. It was Mary's siblings on there, like when they weren't on screen.
Oh, they did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just playing with the soldiers. Dude, we can do this. Don't even worry about it. We got this. So the next piece of trivia is actually kind of my favorite. A lot of the sets from the movie, including Mary's garden and her fountain, which, you know, be careful. The shoe house, the pumpkin house, the trees from the forest were actually a walkthrough display at Disneyland in 61 and 62.
That's awesome.
I know, right? You could go and you could see them. I personally would not walk through Mary's garden. I'd be afraid it was going to eat me. But, like, I would have loved to have seen that. I think that would be really cool.
I wish they did more stuff. I mean, it's funny. I'm like, I wish they had more walkthrough things, but most stuff is all CG in movies now. but still, I wish they had more. It was kind of like a little mini attraction in some ways. I mean, it wasn't, you know, so I wish they had a little more. I mean, they do it a little bit. I know that they had a lot of the stuff from Frankenweenie a few years ago in the parks.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish they actually did that more often.
I do too. I think it would be really, really cool. And like the 60th anniversary is coming up in May, and it's their diamond celebration, and the whole thing about it is supposed to be like nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing back a lot of these old things.
You're talking about the 60th of Disneyland, to be specific.
Yes, sorry, the 60th anniversary of Disneyland. But they're bringing back a lot of old things. And it would be really cool if they, you know, not necessarily would bring back this particular thing, although I think that would be awesome. But if they would bring back some old stuff like that.
I think that's a whole podcast episode there.
Right?
I was speculating what would you want to see. Especially since... you know, I'm reading a lot about, in the Disneyland story, the book, reading a lot about a lot of things that used to be there, so that would be cool.
I'm a huge fan of Yesterland, so we should definitely do an episode about that.
Yes, creepy Yesterland. So legendary Disney animator Ward Kimball was supposed to direct this film, but he left after a falling out with Walt. While Walt was away, Kimball arranged all the auditions and approved the set designs, which were considered to be, quote-unquote, Walt's domain. So, I guess you don't want to step on Walt's toes there.
Right? Don't do that.
We had a little discussion off mic about this, which I feel like is for another time. But I feel like there was a little overreacting going on here. But, you know, especially how much that Ward had contributed over the years. But he eventually came back. He's done a lot of things. He even worked on Mary Poppins. So.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, they just had a little argument. Yeah. It's cool. Big.
Yeah, they worked it out.
That's what's important.
So, Babes in Toyland. Sort of creepy? Definitely some creepy parts, but there's so much of the film that's not creepy that I have a hard time saying that it's a creepy movie.
Yeah, we decided to do this review because Babes in Toyland is a creepy movie and Babes in Toyland is a Christmas movie, and it turns out that Babes in Toyland is not really Christmassy or creepy. I give it 2 creepy thumbs down. But it has a net, so I love it.
Yeah, we got a net, so that's good. So I couldn't set it better myself, so I won't. You said it. There you go. Well, it's almost time to end this episode. But before that happens, I'm going to tell you some things that you need to know. If you would like to contact the show with your thoughts or requests or whatever your little heart wants to say,
You can email the show by going to creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you can't get enough of listening to me talk, you can check out my podcast, The Even James Has a Podcast Podcast, by going to TheEvenJamesHasAPodcastPodcast.com. And also be sure to check out Roxy's podcast titled Roxy's World, which you can find by going to WelcomeToRoxy'sWorld.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google Plus, Tumblr, and Pinterest, your one-stop shop is CreepyKingdom.com. Well, and until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha